will the North Koreans actually come out and say that they are going to have a summit with Donald Trump? That's the real question at this point.
There are other questions surrounding the planned summit between the U.S. and North Korea. We will explore that. This is Thursday, March 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. That's where I am. You're part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, there are reports of more tariffs to be placed on trade with China. We'll find out the reasons and the consequences if that happens. And the search is on for the mysterious disappearance of an ancient shark's tooth in a remote area of Australia. All on today's VOA Asia. South Korea has asked North Korea for a high-level meeting March 29th to discuss preparations for an inter-Korean summit in late April. A South Korean presidential spokesman said Seoul wishes to discuss the schedule, agenda, and makeup of the delegations. Meanwhile, President Moon Jae-in floated the possibility of a three-way summit between South Korea, North Korea, and the United States on the heels of a proposed meeting between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump in May. Such a dramatic event, he said, would depend on progress toward denuclearization and peace on the peninsula. So far, Pyongyang has not responded to President Trump's March 8th acceptance of its proposal for talks. However, state-run media said the North, not international sanctions, they said, are driving the current peace offensive. It comes from a position from strength, not weakness, they said. North Korean officials have visited two Scandinavian countries in recent days, Finland and Sweden, but Harry Kazianis, director of defense studies at the Washington-based Center for the National Interest, told VOA's Victor Beatty those are unlikely venues for a U.S.-North Korean meeting.
I don't think Kim Jong-un would feel particularly safe in a European meeting. You know, there'd be a lot of people who would want to arrest him. I don't see the North Koreans seeing that being as a possible venue. There's really only one place I can see this happening, and that's right along the demilitarized zone. It's about as neutral as you can get it. And I think for the Trump administration, there's no way that they're going to go to Pyongyang and have any sort of summit. The optics would be basically completely controlled by North Korea, and you'd be giving them a huge propaganda win. The only place they can do it is the DMZ.
The South Koreans and the Americans announced joint military exercises will get underway April 1st. They're being described as low-key drills. Any significance to that? Could that upset the possible plans for a meeting?
So far, the North Koreans have been very quiet since these statements have come out about full eagle and other military exercises. And according to all my contacts in Seoul, different governments, it seems to me like this has been all sort of, I want to say, almost pre-programmed by the North Koreans. It seems like there's been sort of a tacit agreement from Pyongyang that they would not really, you know, object to these exercises too ferociously. And so far, that's been pretty much the case. So I think all in all, things are moving along nicely. It's just, will the North Koreans actually come out and say that they are going to have a summit with Donald Trump? That's the real question at this point.
Nearly 2 weeks after the offer made through South Korea and the White House quickly accepted, almost complete silence. What do you make of it?
We're missing something here. I really do think there is some sort of X factor. It could just be as simple as the North Koreans are shocked that Donald Trump actually took them up on their offer. In many respects, I think he basically called the North Koreans bluff. I don't think they had any intentions of him ever accepting. So I think part of this could be the North Koreans are trying to figure out either a negotiating strategy, what they could ask for potentially in these type of meetings. So it's a little mysterious.
President Moon Wednesday said despite being an unexplored path, he underscored the importance of a U.S.-North Korean meeting. He said denuclearization requires a U.S. guarantee, and that requires a normalization of the North-U.S. relationship. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Afghan officials say a suicide blast killed at least 31 people and wounded more than 65 others in Kabul. Vietnam is edging closer to Australia as it seeks broader international help in checking China's expansion in the disputed South China Sea. Myanmar's President Hu Tinya resigned Wednesday, with his office saying he wants to take a rest from his duties. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. We continue now with VOA Asia. U.S. lawmakers differ widely on the wisdom of President Donald Trump meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to defuse nuclear tensions between the two countries and on the likely outcome of such an encounter. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman has more.
A Trump-Kim meeting could be a once-in-a-generation opportunity to avert nuclear confrontation or a foolish gambit, depending on who is speaking on Capitol Hill. Some lawmakers are optimistic.
My view is go big. Let's end the Korean War. I support this engagement by the president. I think him meeting with the leader of North Korea is the last best chance to avoid a war.
Others are deeply skeptical.
Well, I'm not certain that the president ought to initially meet with Kim Jong-un. I'm not sure I want to give him the benefit of being seen with the president of the United States.
Senator Kennedy doubts Kim's willingness to denuclearize his country or that he would keep any pledge to scrap North Korea's atomic program. He also questions how denuclearization would be verified if agreed to.
I support the most drastic sanctions that can possibly be created.
Many Democrats, meanwhile, question the readiness of the Trump administration for what would be the most consequential nuclear summit since former President Ronald Reagan's encounters with then-Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev in the 1980s. North Korea's official media have yet to acknowledge that a Trump-Kim meeting is under discussion. If preliminary consultations involving the Trump administration and Pyongyang are taking place ahead of a nuclear summit, they are occurring far from public view. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
There are reports in various news outlets here in the United States that President Trump is considering new tariffs on imports from China, tariffs that could be announced by the end of this week. There is opposition to that idea. Joining us on VOA Asia is Aaron Ennis, the Senior Vice President of the U.S.-China Business Council. Aaron, what's your organization's take on these proposed tariffs?
Well, I think the first thing to keep in mind is why we're even considering actions against China. The context for this is a case that was filed last August that talked about IP protection and forced technology transfer in China. These are two really interesting and important issues for companies that do business in China, but there have been ongoing challenges for years, and companies want to see solutions to those problems. What we are considering, or what we hear the administration is considering currently, is that efforts to try to get China to move on those two issues, to improve IP protection and to eliminate requirements for technology transfer, that might include tariffs, it might include investment restrictions, we've heard it might include visas. At this point, we don't know the specifics, though.
If there is the case that these tariffs do go through, the reports say they would be placed across a wide range of consumer goods, from apparel to electronics, also agricultural products. What effect do you think this would have on U.S. businesses and consumers?
Well, so the first question that we ask when we look at this is, how are tariffs going to try to address those two issues that I mentioned, IP enforcement and technology transfer? And right now, it's unclear. How will putting tariffs on a product get China to want to come to the table on it? So we're hoping the administration's going to spell out exactly what their plan is of how tariffs might help to achieve that goal. But in general, what we think will happen is, you know, frankly, we're going to see an increase in the cost of products that come to the U.S., and we might see some reaction from the Chinese in response as well. But, you know, those reactions are probably going to be varied, and we're not going to know a lot about it. But the bottom line is, much of what we import from China, we're importing from there because supply chains have moved to China. And if the cost of producing a product in China becomes higher because of a tariff, we should expect that there'll be some movement of production of products out of China not necessarily back to the U.S., but probably more likely to other countries in the area, like Vietnam or Malaysia or Indonesia. And that means that we're not going to be importing as much product from China, but we are going to be importing it probably from whomever the next lowest cost producer is.
Erin Ennis is Senior Vice President of the U.S.-China Business Council. Erin, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
You're listening to VOA Asia. This news alert from VOA Asia. Officials say 8 people, 4 soldiers, a policeman, and 4 suspected rebels have been killed in a continuing fierce gun battle in Indian-administered Kashmir. Taiwan said Wednesday it sent ships and planes to track a Chinese aircraft carrier which passed through the Taiwan Strait. The top military officer for the U.S. says Afghan security forces have identified key areas of the country that must be secure for elections later this year. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Much of Asia is prone to earthquakes. Recovering from a major tremor is often a long, painful, and difficult process. Researchers have found that a data-driven approach to disaster preparedness can help cities at risk bounce back after earthquakes. VOA's Faith Lapidus has an explanation.
Like most tall buildings in downtown Los Angeles, this 33-story high-rise is wired up with earthquake monitoring sensors.
In Los Angeles, it's mandated that quote-unquote tall buildings be instrumented.
Those instruments are often tucked away where you wouldn't even think to look for them.
Well, the big one we all know is going to come. And in Southern California, there's an expectation that it's overdue.
With support from the National Science Foundation, UCLA structural engineers John Wallace and Henry Burton are exploring new ways to build resilience into urban clusters, dense cityscapes packed with tall buildings vulnerable to earthquakes, like downtown Los Angeles.
What I consider the 21st century challenge is being able to engineer earthquake resilient communities. And by resilient, what we mean is in the event of a major earthquake, we're able to minimize the initial impact, adapt to any major changes that happen as a result of the earthquake, and recover in a timely manner.
Key to that is data. This is an accelerometer, the workhorse of the LA Earthquake Monitoring Network. It measures how much a building sways during seismic events. Thousands of them in tall buildings all over the city record data around the clock. But after an earthquake, analyzing that data is not high on the city's agenda. It's done in some buildings, but Wallace and Burton want to see a citywide rapid assessment process. They're using the data to verify and refine models that predict how tall buildings will respond to earthquakes. They say data from shake table tests like these can only get you so far. Their new models incorporate performance data from actual buildings.
After an earthquake, you have to have engineers go to buildings individually and inspect those buildings and make a decision on whether or not the building is safe to occupy. Part of what models and systems we will be developing will be able to do is to serve to help guide these engineers in terms of looking for the hotspots.
Burton says the challenge to building more resilient urban centers is for engineers to think beyond the structural integrity of any single tall building to non-structural components like water and power and how those can be protected from damage. They say their new methods could save lives and money beyond Los Angeles in other cities rocked by significant earthquakes. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and on SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you wherever you go. Find us at voanews.com and let us hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook, also our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kevin Fowler, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, David Bird, and Skylar Ogden. Also, to all of our listeners and affiliates like Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines, Media Biz Radio in Thammasat Sak Polytechnic in Singapore, and Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day.